This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Off and rolling on a Tuesday, May 27, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. Hope everybody enjoyed their Memorial Day weekend. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @Edgy_Kuhn71, although X or Twitter, kind of a defunct app right now, just not working very well. So you can try to follow me. I don't know if it'll actually go through until Elon gets those bug fixes right. But we have Connor Dunning as well with me. He's the executive producer of the show on X @CDunning99. Connor, how's it going, brother? How was your Memorial Day weekend?
Oh, it was beautiful. Beautiful. Other than the weather, you know, it was nice and rainy.
Okay.
On Memorial Day weekend, but I had a very relaxed Memorial Day weekend.
I feel like rainy is good. You're a movie watcher, man.
Correct.
You can watch movies in the rain. That's all good.
I watched a lot of movies.
Yes. What was on the list? I can tell you what's on my list. You're going to laugh at me, but
I was running through a lot of Studio Ghibli movies this past weekend. They're good, like cozy, rainy day type of movies.
Okay. Know what I watched for the when did it come out? Killers of the Flower Moon?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Finally got around to watching it.
Hell yeah.
Phenomenal film.
Heavy.
I got to be honest, man. It moved me to a point about 2 hours because it's a 3-hour and 30-minute movie. About 2 hours and 45 minutes in, the tear ducts were working a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't cry. Didn't have any tears fall down my face. But I felt it coming. It was on the way. That was a tough one to watch. I felt dirty afterwards.
Yeah, you need a shower.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Although I started at 10 p.m.
Yikes.
Finish at 1:30.
That's a late start for a 3-hour and 30-minute movie.
It was a nice, actually, I shouldn't say that. It was not a nice lead into my sleep.
No. Yeah, but you had a wild dream.
Yeah, well, no. I'm surfing the web, you know, doom scrolling, TikTok, looking up the history of Osage and those murders. That's what I was doing when I tried to fall asleep. But I had a good weekend regardless. I had a great weekend regardless. Hope everybody enjoyed theirs. 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We have a lot to get to today. We have NBA Conference Finals. We have one series that has pulled closer together, Knicks and Pacers. Knicks won Game 3 on the road in Indiana, behind an effort from Karl Anthony Towns that I can only describe as the best stretch of basketball I've ever seen him play. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 3-for-4 from 3 in the fourth quarter. And he wasn't playing stupid basketball. Maybe some of those shots were stupid. If they wouldn't have gone in, we would have called them stupid. But he was on a heater, and he was unbelievable in that fourth quarter and brought the Knicks to victory, even with Jalen Brunson on the bench most of the game in foul trouble. But the other series, Western Conference Finals, Timberwolves handled business in Game 3, won by 48 points, but then last night they lose. They're down 3-1 to the Oklahoma City Thunder as the series shifts back to OKC. We'll talk about P.J. Haggerty. P.J. Haggerty's committed to a place. We'll tell you where that is and break it down here in just a moment. Also on top of that, we'll have some NFL news. Aaron Rodgers spoke over the weekend. Plenty to get to there. As far as guests are concerned, 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join, and then 6 o'clock, Christian Fowler will join per normal on a Tuesday from Bluff City Media. All right, I want to get to the news that we got yesterday, Connor. P.J. Haggerty is officially committed to Kansas State. He goes to play with Jerome Tang and the Wildcats. This is his fourth school in 4 years. Now, what is being reported behind the scenes? Not so savory for P.J. Haggerty. He wanted $4 million and a point guard role. I don't know, I can't speak on the point guard role, what Jerome Tang has in mind for him, although I'd imagine with the money they're paying him, probably will just put him in whatever role highlights him the best, same role he probably had at Memphis. But here's what's being reported. He wanted $4 million. How about $2 million base salary and $500,000, $500,000 in incentives? How about that? Does that work for you? Because that's what P.J. Haggerty ultimately committed and signed to Kansas State for. And if you go look, Corey Smith covers NC State. We know that P.J. Haggerty for the longest time was crystal balled, I should say, to NC State. This is what Corey Smith had to say. To be clear, NC State didn't lose momentum for P.J. Haggerty. He came back from the combine looking for more money after an already agreed-upon deal, and NC State opted to cut bait and close the deal with Darion Williams. Now, I just think this situation was botched in a lot of ways. One, I can imagine the situation going completely different for P.J. Haggerty had he gotten into the portal early. He got into the portal with 5 days left till the close. He waited and waited and waited, got into the portal, goes to the NBA Combine, was not making decisions, so now you're late in the calendar. Spots are already filled up at the biggest schools in the country. And you end up at a place that's sort of throwing stuff at the wall, hoping that things stick. That's what they're doing. Look at the Coleman Hawkins thing from last year. They're just paying a lot of desperate money, hoping that it helps them compete in the Big 12. And we'll see how that works for them with P.J. Haggerty. So I think that was botched. Also, we have learned now, and we always had the suspicions of this, he does not have a legitimate agent really making decisions for him. It's mostly his dad. It sounds familiar. Sound very familiar to a situation we had earlier in the offseason in football. Nico Amalieva.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nico Amalieva is making substantially less money than he was making at Tennessee with his move to UCLA. P.J. Haggerty will still make more, but there was more on the table for him, whether it was NC State or Memphis, if he would have made a decision earlier and not tried to leverage out all of these different things on a consistent basis. But it's a bad decision. It's not proving to get him the results he wanted. And what it really highlights for me is, as opposed to normal thinking, college athletes and their handlers, and whether it's agent or family, they're now getting into the portal with the hopes of making more money. The hopes. Why don't you get in the portal when you have a guarantee for more money out there? When you've already discussed these things with other schools? Right, I know tampering runs rampant, and that's what people would tell me, but tampering's going to always run rampant. It's hard to get a handle on. But players are leaving universities for the hope of more money, not the reality of more money. And for me, that's a frustrating reality of where we are at right now in college athletics. You need to have more understanding of what's out there for you before you hop in the portal. You need to have people behind the scenes that give you better advice when it comes to getting into the portal and going to another school. So, I mean, good for P.J. Haggerty. He's going to make about $1 million more than he made last year. Didn't reach his $4 million, but he's still going to make $1 million more. He's making a fair amount of money. But in the end of the day, this is not how he expected this to go. And if he tells you, if we hear that this is exactly how they expected it to go, him and his dad, they're telling you a lie. So, just frustrating to watch how this all played out and how desperate it got for PJ at the very end. And when you look back at Memphis's sort of official offer, I've checked this with multiple sources that would have knowledge of this. Their offer was $3 million, and they pulled it at a point when they just felt like, okay, we have our roster together. We don't need anybody upsetting what we have built already. So he would have made more money had he stayed at Memphis. I know that's a frustration for a lot of people.
It's very clear to me that they thought they could leverage all these different things against these schools to try to get to that $4 million. In my opinion, what probably happened was P.J. Haggerty got a $3 million offer from Memphis to stay after an All-American season. And he looked at that and said, if Memphis is going to offer me $3 million, who's going to offer me more? I can definitely get more money from a school that's bigger than Memphis. So he went into the transfer portal. He got connected to some of these schools. He wasn't getting that money. And then all of a sudden he said, well, I also want to be a point guard. And then it's like, okay, well, if you want to leverage for more money and play a new position, one that you're not truly comfortable in, that doesn't make a ton of sense. And then he got kind of lucky. NC State would have been a beautiful landing spot for him with Will Wade. A lot of eyeballs on that team. They would have been a tournament team. He would have had a chance to be an All-American again. Sounds like he may have been able to get some point guard play there too. He would have gotten a good amount of money. That was a good fit for him. But then do you know what happened? He went to the NBA draft combine. and he scrimmaged well. So he probably went back to NC State and said, I scrimmaged well. I'm either going to stay in the draft or you have to pay me more money.
And they said, go to
and
the draft.
And NC State
then.
Said,
do it.
All right, do it. We got Darion Williams. Yeah. Signed.
Well,
bye.
And also, do it. You're going to make way less there.
Yeah, they're
and
like,
we don't
do
have
it.
To spend the money we have set aside for you here.
It seems like everybody just continually called PJ Haggerty's bluff.
Yeah.
Like Memphis
why
was like,
they?
Okay, well, we're going to pull the offer. We have all these players now.
Why wouldn't they?
You're not going to be able to just use us for leverage. NC State said the same thing.
We got to a point in the calendar where he got into the portal 5 days before it closed, then went to the NBA Combine, wasn't making decisions. We got to a point in the calendar with the transfer portal where, yeah, in the past, we've seen teams, in Kansas State, I think, fits this, desperate.
Yeah.
And they're desperate to throw out
you
the money.
You said that
they
on
have.
Friday.
Sure. But also, you got to a point in the calendar where all of the good spots, the good landing spots, the Floridas, the Arkansas, the what have yous, they're gone. They're off the table for you now. So you're going to have to settle. You're desperate at this point. There's desperation on both sides with this marriage at Kansas State, and I'm curious how it's going to turn itself out, how it's going to work.
Well, there's no doubt about he's in a worse situation team-wise.
Yeah.
They weren't a tournament team. Maybe borderline tournament team if they get it together for next season. And he's making
$500,000 to $1 million less yep. than he would have at Memphis.
So what was the point in going? What was the point? You tried to leverage all these schools against each other, and you ended up in a worse position than you were. You left. If you want to play point guard, well, guess what? You left one of the best point guards the NBA's ever seen in Penny Hardaway. You left $3 million, and you left a tournament team. Why? So you can make $500,000 less?
For the perceived opportunity. Of making more money
for
the
chance
open
of making more money,
not the reality, not the guarantee that you're going to make more money. The chance,
and that is why
that's
again,
backwards. That
again,
doesn't make sense.
Again,
to me.
We have got to have some guardrails in place, not just for the schools,
for
but
the
for
kids,
the players
to protect themselves
because
from themselves.
Parents keep coming in thinking that they are masters of negotiation when they are clearly not, and they do not have as much leverage as they think. Just because you had one good season at a school doesn't mean that they're going to just dump all the money they have into one player. You got offered $3 million from Memphis. That's a huge amount of money to play college basketball for one season. For one season. And you sniffed at it because you wanted to maybe make $1 million more when there was no guarantee that that was going to happen. I mean, listen, he's still going to make $2.5 million.
Sure, plenty.
That's still great. He's gonna be fine, but man, he got some bad advice.
You left a bunch of money on the table. You did.
$500,000 is a lot of money.
With the timing and decision-making process, I think he lost. It's how I feel. And I don't
he
think how you
lost.
Can look at this. I don't think you can look at this situation any other way. You left a better situation for yourself for a worse situation. You left a situation that would have paid you $3 million for a situation that may pay you $2.5 million. It's just bad decision-making processes have, for players, have been a common occurrence this offseason, whether it be football, basketball, otherwise. You need to have guarantees on the table, an understanding of what your monetary value is on the open market, who has open spots for you, before you hop into the transfer portal and make that decision. You have to take it upon yourself to really feel it out before you get into the transfer portal so you don't end up in a situation like this or Nico Iamaleava. It's nasty. It's nasty. And I agree with you. Guardrails we always talk about in this grand sense of, oh, well, the universities need to know who's going to be on their roster.
Which is true.
And they need less turnover, which is true. But at the end of the day, these players need to be protected from themselves in decisions like this. Bad decisions that cost them. Money, and potential success. I mean, looking at Kansas State and Memphis past couple of years, I know Kansas State was in the Elite Eight a couple of years ago, but since then, really been struggling in the Big 12. Memphis has gone upward, 29-6 last year, 5 seed. Kansas State didn't sniff the tournament. So, it just seems like a completely backwards and, at best, lateral move for PJ Haggerty, at best. But I do think it's a step down in all reality when you talk about money and how that program has been doing. in the Big 12 these past couple of
years. College athletes' parents have got to stop thinking they can negotiate with universities and schools. You cannot. You have professionals that are doing that back to you. If you don't have any experience in negotiation, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. You're not going to leverage these schools against each other like you think that you can.
Yep.
There are other players available. And if you waste their time and you sniff at a good offer like $3 million, they're going to say, fine, go find it somewhere else. And that's why, like, what boggles my mind is he said no to Memphis, which I can understand why he said no to Memphis. He wanted to say, okay, if they're giving me $3 million, maybe somebody else will give me some more. I want to play point guard. They don't necessarily want me to play point guard at Memphis. I understand all that. The NC State one is what's baffling to me. How you didn't just commit to NC State and Will Wade.
Hop at it as soon as the opportunity presented
itself. But no, because you did well in the combine. You said, nope, I did well in the combine. You got to pay me more. And then they went,
And also, let's think about this. That was while or probably after Darion Williams had signed at NC State.
Just foolish.
It's wild.
It's unfortunate. He's going to be fine. Again, he'll be fine.
Let me ask you this, because this will really get down to our true feelings. Are you surprised, or do you think Memphis should open the door a little bit more for P.J. Haggerty at the end? Because according to Parth Upadhyay, according to Jason Munns, by the end of this process, once he pulled himself out of the NBA draft, Memphis had said, our offer's off the table. We're no longer putting that out there for P.J. to take.
No, I think it was too late.
You think it was the right decision?
Yep. I think that they offered him. They allowed the door to be open for a while, and then they probably realized he was just trying to use Memphis's leverage, and they said, no, thank you.
I like it, but I feel similarly. I feel very similar about it as I do with the Josh Heupel situation with Nico Iamaleava.
Right.
Yes.
Your team's not as good. It's better with PJ.
I respect the hell out of standing for what you believe in and making it clear to people that there's a line that I have to draw to have respect for myself. Right? Like, I respect that part of it. But if we get to conference play and they have split their games in the out-of-conference and lost to that good competition, and they don't look as good as they did a year ago in the out-of-conference, we may be having a bit of a different discussion about should they have opened the door for P.J. Haggerty when they had that opportunity, when he clearly had fallen flat on his face after he took himself out of the NBA draft. So, like, that's where I'm at. I respect the decision-making. Having respect for yourself is a good thing. Not being bending the knee to 18 to 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds, to me, is a positive thing for Penny Hardaway in this program. But as we get to the season and we watch this team play, are we going to feel differently?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This team's better if P.J. Haggerty's on it. It's an unfortunate situation, but I agree with you. It's just at some point you can't allow them just to drag you
along. Walk all over you, too.
Yeah, and it's just, listen, man, if you want $3 million and to come play at Memphis again, then commit to Memphis. But stop trying to leverage us against the NBA draft and NC State and Kansas State or whoever the hell else you were trying to leverage Memphis against. At some point, you can't use Memphis anymore. And I wish he was on this team. I wish he just committed for $3 million. That would have been great. We'd be doing a celebration if P.J. Haggerty was on this team. He would instantly be their best player. No doubt about it. All-American. Super talented. I'm still going to be rooting for the kid.
Yeah.
I just think it's really disappointing how this played out because it didn't have to happen this way.
Yep.
And I think that's what's frustrating about it is that you left a great situation and really good money for what reason? Like you said, the possibility of making more money. It didn't have to happen that way. So, to be honest, he's worse off, and unfortunately so is Memphis. That is, you know, they would both be better if they were back together. But that's not how it played out.
Which just brings me back to the four schools in 4 years thing. Like, it just feels like at times, yes, it's about the chance to make more money, but sometimes these guys just get in the portal for the hell of it. Just, I want to change the scenery. Let me go switch it up.
Now, luckily for PJ, it seems like Penny's going to keep a relationship with him.
Sure.
Because Penny's a good dude. He'll still help him out. He'll still be around to help him play point guard and help him teach things, but not during the season. You know, Penny Hardaway would be a great resource to have as a coach when you're trying to figure out how to play point guard. Hot take.
Mark Giannotto, our former colleague, put out this idea, and I really enjoy this. It's just a question about some of these guys that go to four schools in 4 years and just never stay at the same place for two straight years. Said, I wonder if 25 years from now, these great college players who aren't quite NBA level and go to four schools in 4 years will regret it when none of those fans at those schools really remember or celebrate them. And I question to myself, like, how much does that mean right now? Not much. They're making the money that they wanted to make at another school, what have you. But 25 years from now, I think we could look back. Just staying at one place for 1 year does not give those fans time enough to appreciate you to your fullest.
We, unfortunately, the way PJ Haggerty will be remembered, I think, at Memphis was great player, All-American, gave us a really exciting season.
I think we'll remember how
disappointing
this
ending.
How this went.
Well, that, I think that's more of a question for you. You are a former Memphis Tiger athlete. Does the memories and the way people remember those teams mean something to you?
Oh, God, yeah. God, yeah. Being the starting point for the turnaround of Memphis football, that means a hell of a lot to me. And I still hear it from people out there, fans and otherwise, that talk to me and thank me. And, you know, there's some remembrance to that, to being loyal to a school. I'm not saying you have to be loyal to a school.
But
I know loyalty
matter.
Is out the way. But I think when you talk about your legacy in some people's minds and being remembered, it does mean something to stay at a place for more than one season.
Right.
Even if that one season is great. Right. I mean, to really be remembered for one season, a one-off, you probably have to go on a Final Four run or a national championship run for people to really sit down and remember you long-term. And obviously, that depends on what your school and your university has accomplished in the past in basketball.
Right.
But I think you have to stay around and engage with the fans for them to really latch on and enjoy the entirety of you. And I feel like this PJ Haggerty situation, what's going to be remembered is, yeah, he was awesome. He was an All-American. Lost first round without Tyrese Hunter to Colorado State in a 5-12 game. And then gave Memphis the runaround the entire offseason during the transfer portal process. I think that will be remembered to a certain extent more than what was done last year, because of the history of Memphis basketball and what they've accomplished in the past.
If they had won that game, I think that PJ Haggerty would be remembered extremely fondly. I still think that it is true that he's been the best player of the Penny era. Like, he is,
sure.
He's been the top guy.
Yes.
He's the number one,
I
the All-American. They won a conference championship. They won the tournament. They made it to the NCAA tournament. It was an amazing run with PJ Haggerty. It's unfortunate that it ended this way. I do think, in years to come, though, we will remember PJ for how he played with Memphis, and he helped them get back to the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
He helped them win a conference.
And if they're good again next year, it looks like, okay, this was the start of Penny understanding what he needed,
sure,
and moving in the right direction.
I do think that later we'll remember him fondly, but I do think for the next few years, there's just, it's an unfortunate bad taste in your mouth at the end that didn't need to be there.
In years to come, like, I don't know, in that 20-25 year period that Mark sort of brought up, I mean, it depends on what these teams going forward accomplish.
Sure.
If Doug McDaniel and this team get you to another 5 seed, I think the thought process behind PJ Haggerty and what he accomplished last year goes right out the window. People don't really care. People move on. But if this is the high point for what they're going to accomplish the next 5 years, which I don't expect, I hope is not the case.
Right.
Then sure, we'll remember PJ fondly. But I just, the way this has gone, how annoying this recruiting process was, the transfer portal process, the decision-making process. I just feel like that's leaving this sour, nasty taste in the mouth of most of the fan base.
For sure. I mean, I think a lot of people, I'm not going to lie about it. When I saw the amount of money he was getting, it made me feel, if I was like, LOL. I sent a text to my friends that was like, he's getting less money.
You made your bed, you're going to have
land. I was like, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. It may, like, part of me felt a little vindicated as a Memphis fan.
Yeah,
I was like,
a little bit.
Why'd you leave?
Yeah.
You went to a worse situation. It didn't make any sense. It's, you know, if he had made $3 million at NC State, and I would have been rooting for him. I'd been like, okay, that made sense why you went there. Bigger school. You know, you got Will Wade coming in. A lot of eyeballs are going to be on the team. You had a good NBA draft combine. You're going to be in the NCAA tournament next year. It made sense. Like, I wish he was at Memphis, but it makes sense why he went there. Kansas State? Nah, man. Come on, bro.
For less money?
What are you doing? What are you doing?
And for $500,000 that's floating. Because of it, it's all incentive based,
right?
Just this is not this is not a, a great move. Good move. Quite frankly, it's a bad move by PJ Haggerty. And we'll see how Kansas State plays next year. But
it's just, and like, listen,
tougher
again,
conference as I well. How's he going to get himself ready to play in that Big 12 conference, which is a good basketball conference year after year after year? Like, how does that 21.7 points per game translate to the Big 12? I'm curious about that.
And again, I'm not necessarily mad at PJ. I'm rooting for the kid. I want him to do well. I just think it was a silly decision. Yes. And I also understand it's not him making it. It's the people around him that are giving him really bad advice and really don't know what they're doing. And that is why this doesn't need to happen anymore. We have way too many examples of this happening in college basketball and college football now. Way too many examples of kids leaving money on the table because of the potential to make more money somewhere else because their parents think there's some negotiating master when they are not. You're negotiating with major universities who have professionals doing it. You're not going to beat them.
Yep.
When somebody offers you $3 million, you say, thank you, where do I sign?
Yes. Unless you have a guarantee for $4 million. Not a hope, but a guarantee.
Unless Kansas said we'll give you $3.5 million.
Exactly.
You stay.
Yes. I guess my biggest hope after this entire conversation is for these athletes to learn from these mistakes.
Yes.
Learn from the problems that Aniko Amaleava has had. Learn from PJ Haggerty and the decision that's been made here. Learn from these things. Don't make the same mistake. Learn from the history. I just hope that we can, as a society, as these, you know, these athletes continue to grow and progress in this same system, I hope they can learn from these situations.
Right.
So that's my biggest hope. All right, now, conference finals action over the weekend was pretty fun. Eastern Conference Finals is living up to the hype. The Knicks were down 2-0 after leaving New York, and they go into Indiana for game three and win. And then the Thunder, kind of what I thought heading into the weekend, but they're up 3-1. They're in the driver's seat heading back to Oklahoma City. We'll break down the conference finals when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Before we get into the conference finals, I have a question for you on TikTok. Have you seen Sailing with Phoenix?
Yes.
How
he made it to Hawaii.
He made it to Oahu.
Good
it
for
did
him.
Not, it didn't. So for people that don't know, Sailing with Phoenix, it's a guy named Oliver Widger who decided, because he's got a degenerative disc disease in his back and his neck, he decided to cash out his 401k at his job, buy a sailboat, and sail from Oregon to Hawaii. He went to Oahu. And he made it there, and was it about a month? It took about a month for him to get there?
I think like 20-something days, like 24, 25 days.
Yeah, but Sailing with Phoenix, he was sailing with his cat. That's the only person he was with.
Yeah, Oliver.
Yeah. So
he was, and it was very funny, because if you were watching him, he started losing it a bit by the end. Like,
of
he
course.
Had,
of
did
course.
You see, he had like an area of just dead animals he was finding along the way that he was putting on his boat. And he had those wide eyes by the end of it. It was like, oh, we're approaching Wilson territory.
This
here.
Is what I
I'm
was,
happy he made
I,
it to Hawaii.
When I,
good
it was,
for him.
I think it was like day 24 and he was like approaching Hawaii and he had those wide eyes and he looked like he was losing it. I'm like, they have a full-on party for him waiting when he docks.
That's
terrifying. Like, he has not talked to another human being besides TikTok and, you know, the you know, virtual people
one of the,
for a month.
One of the best or the funniest developments of the entire thing was, when you watch the entire journey, it's very endearing. He really
yes.
bears his heart to you. He talks about
yeah.
his anxieties and everything. But one of those anxieties is that he has social anxiety.
yeah.
So what do they do at the boat club? We're going to throw a giant party with hundreds of people and make you speak in front of everybody when you haven't
Did
spoken
you see
or
him
seen
speak
it.
At the podium?
Yeah, he was like,
thank you for coming out.
All he wanted was a steak. Get that man a steak, get him a hotel room, and leave him alone.
And now he's talking about traveling around the whole world. I don't know if he's going to stay in Hawaii very long.
But I was happy to see that he arrived safely.
Yeah, because it's nasty out there on the Pacific.
By that last video, though, we were like, oh, my God, he needs to make it. Because he was starting to lose it a little bit.
I found myself, though, like every night, because they had the trackers and everything. I followed one of the trackers so I could see where he was on any given night. I was invested in this thing just like he was. And I think there's a lot of people invested in it. But I know this was not the point for him. Good monetary decision for him, ultimately. I bet he made a lot of money, and I guarantee the brand deals are going to start rolling in.
Yes, good for him.
Good for him. I mean, insanity, something I would never do.
There were like three
Even
or four
for
times,
money,
too,
I wouldn't do it.
Where he barely avoided complete disaster.
Yeah. There was water rolling into his boat.
He almost locked himself in like this little cubby. And he had to, like, break a latch to get himself out. He was like, if I would have been stuck in here, I would have died. It's like, oh, my God.
And honestly, I kind of got seasick just watching some of his videos. It, like, the amount of just rocking back and forth with the waves out in the open ocean in the Pacific. I don't know how he kept his head on straight. He probably had one of the...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Those patches that you put on before you get on a cruise.
Follow me?
Yeah, probably had a million of them. Just like... five of them right on his shoulder any given day, because I would have lost any bit of food that I ate. I get seasick. That looked nasty out there. All right, now getting into the conference finals, hard transition there. Let's start with the Western Conference Finals. The Thunder are up 3-1. And for all intents and purposes, I think they are in the driver's seat to go win the NBA Finals the way they are playing right now. Obviously, in Game 3, it was ugly on Saturday night. Timberwolves won by 42. They ran away with it. The Thunder were not ready for that away environment. They have some young players that still, in my opinion, there's something missing with. When we talk about them being young and the youngest team in the NBA, I still think some of their role players feel that. Jalen Williams was horrid in Game 3. Horrid. He was not efficient. He didn't try to assert himself, had 13 points. SGA, MVP, horrid. Really bad. Now, I don't expect that from him. He obviously made up for it in Game 4. We'll talk about it in a second. But 14 points on 4 for 13 shooting. They just did not have anybody show up. They had three guys in their starting lineup in double figures, but no one exceeded 14 points. And then they had to, the whole fourth quarter, play their backups, A.J. Mitchell and, you know, all those different guys. So Game 3 was nasty. But they responded really well in Game 4. And I have to give a tip of the cap to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Yes, he got to the free throw line, and that's been a huge conversation. Yeah, he went 12 for 14 there, but 40 points, 9 rebounds, 10 assists. And something that has really come up for me watching him, like just sort of the idea behind SGA and what makes him so brilliant on a basketball floor, is how unpredictable he is when he's taking the ball up the floor and he's setting up offense. Yes, he can get his teammates involved. He had 10 assists. But outside of that, it's like, what do you do with him? When you give him a high screen and roll, how do you deal with that? If you're Rudy Gobert and you're in drop coverage, he will make you pay, whether it's a deep mid-range or a three-pointer. If you try to play up on him, he can get right by you, draw a foul, or get to the rim at will. There's just seemingly, offensively, no place on the floor this season in these playoffs that he struggles from. So the unpredictability of SGA has made him brilliant this entire season. I thought it made him brilliant last night.
Yeah, he was phenomenal last night. Phenomenal. He was efficient as well. Jalen Williams was excellent after his poor game in Game 3. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, it was one of those wins where I think they are probably going to win the finals now. It was like it was one of those ones where you're like, okay, their backs were against the wall. They had to fight for it. There's been a couple games in this series where they've had to do it. I was impressed by it. Their role players didn't really show up, but you got an MVP performance from the MVP, and all he needs is one of their guys to keep up with them. to be effective. And Jalen Williams certainly did that. I think it was probably the best game Jalen Williams has had in the playoffs because of the stakes that it was, where it was happening on the road. He usually only plays well at home. It being on the road, I think, was a big deal. But SGA deserves a ton of credit. And listen, I understand people are still frustrated with the whistle that he gets and the free throws. He's not good because of the free throws, though. And yes, he gets foul calls. And yes, they're a little picky when it comes to him.
Yeah.
But the reason he is effective is because he's so elusive and because he knows how to control his body and because he can score at all three levels. That's what's important.
He can shoot a three,
he can hit a mid-range, he can score at the rim. That's why he's so effective.
I have one word for it, and I think it applies to the other MVP candidate, feel. He's got right there with Jokic when it comes to feel on a basketball floor, how he can score, where he can score from, when he needs to get his teammates involved. He just has a feel for the game that few people in NBA history have had. It's really fun to watch him play. Yes, I know the fouls can be annoying at times, but I think it's more than that with him. It's very clearly more than that. You don't win the MVP by just being a free throw merchant.
He now has the most 30-point games, 59, by an MVP regular season and playoffs since Michael Jordan.
Is that good?
It's pretty good.
Seems pretty good. Now, on the Timberwolves side, I have one word for them, inconsistency.
Yep.
Game one, you don't have your other guys showing up. The Nikhil Alexander-Walkers, the Dante DiVincenzos, the Naz Reeds were not there. They combined for, in game one, 4 for 24 on open threes. Game two, you get to that game, and Ant is pretty good, but here's Julius Randle with 6 points. So you're just not getting, the consistency you want from Julius Randle. Game three, everybody showed up, and they hammered him. I get all that. And then game four last night, Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle disappear. The rest of the roster plays unbelievably well. Jaden McDaniels, 22. Rudy Gobert had 13-9. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, 23. Dante DiVincenzo, 21. Naz Reid, 11 on 3-for-4 shooting. But Ant Edwards and Julius Randle at home are nowhere to be found. So, there's just inconsistency game to game with where they're getting their scoring from and who's actually going to show up in playoff basketball. It's been hard to get a feel for this Timberwolves team this year.
We talked about it last week. I love Anthony Edwards. I like watching him play basketball. He is one of the young stars of this league. He's going to be one of the faces of this league. He gets one of the biggest passes I have seen from a superstar player or somebody who's supposed to be a superstar player. He has been so inconsistent in these playoffs, he deserves more flack.
Yeah.
He was terrible. Terrible in game four at home. And to be quite honest, he kind of gave up. There were a few moments where he just wasn't giving the effort that you need from somebody. When you were down in a series at home in game
four. It's a close game, too.
Rebounds were going by him. He wasn't going for them. I understand if you have a bad shooting night, but you have to be engaged on defense, on the boards, trying to move the basketball. Just because you're not scoring doesn't mean you can disappear from a basketball game. And he's done that a few times in these playoffs. I know that he has some big-time benchmark wins in his young career against some MVP players. He really does. But he has been extremely inconsistent throughout these playoffs, and I expect that to change as he ages.
Sure, he's
23. But there's no way to ignore it, and I don't really understand why people kind of just act like it doesn't happen.
Well,
but when you look at his playoffs this year, they've been so up and down game to game.
I get what you're saying. I think we do that with young players, though. I think we do that with young players who get to these types of spots on a consistent basis. He's been in the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row. I don't think it's been all his doing. I think he's got a supporting cast that has helped him and helped lift him up at times when he hasn't been great. But I think we do that with young players. If you're under 25, I think the general consensus of people will say he'll get better and more consistent as his career goes along. They did it with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown for a while until they got past 25. Then you're like, all right, guys, it's time to go win a championship. And they did. They handled business. But I think You just see a general pass for guys that are under 25 playing in these types of games because you think they're going to get more opportunities at this if they've already been able to do this early in their career.
Maybe so. Here, I'm just going to go through his game log this playoffs. Here's the first round against Lakers. 22, 25, 29, 43, 15.
Yeah.
Not bad, but
yeah.
Still inconsistent.
Right.
Here's his game log against the Warriors. 23, 20, 36, 30, 22. inconsistent again. He didn't have to be great against the Warriors, though, because they were just the better team. They didn't have the
It's
they
this
the
series, though, for sure.
This series, 18, 32, 30, 16.
Yeah.
That's not going to beat the number one team that won 68 games. It's just not.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate to see because I want Anthony Edwards to show up every game. The games are better when he is engaged the entire time. I do think that his ankle injury is a part of this,
sure.
though. That is one thing that I do think that is being under-discussed a little bit. His ankle has been injured since round one. He re-aggravated it in the series against the Warriors. He hurt it again in the series against the Thunder. So it is bothering him. But I think that we were a little quick to maybe crown Anthony Edwards when, yes, he made it to a Western Conference Finals last year. He made it again this year. But it wasn't just because of him. His team did a lot of the heavy lifting, especially this year. And I do expect him to improve as we move forward, but I do think we got to be honest about it. He's been bad. He's been inconsistent. Not bad. He's been inconsistent in the series that he needed to be the most consistent in.
Yes.
And the Timberwolves are not going to beat them if he's scoring
even the best,
under 25.
Even the best of the best have taken their licks in the playoffs early in their career.
Absolutely.
Kobe Bryant was a guy who had to take some licks for the first 3 years. Then, first 3 years, he was in the playoffs. And then he won three straight championships.
100%.
So
right.
there was
Great
that.
Point.
Michael Jordan had to lose a lot of times
so before, Scottie Pippen.
Before he got to the NBA Finals. So, like, it's not uncommon to see some of the greats early in their career
right.
have these issues in the playoffs, especially against good teams.
I think it's more of a disappointing thing, though, because when he's on and he's having one of his games, it's so exciting to
yes.
watch. When he's talking mess to the crowd, he's talking to the other team, you feel the energy from him. He is a really exciting player. Like, that first quarter he had the other night was unreal
yes.
to watch. I think he had 16 points in the first quarter or something like that. It was electric. And then it's just, it's unfortunate that that doesn't happen every single game. But again, to your point, still a very young player. He's only 23 years old, and he's dealing with an injury. And he's playing, as we've talked about, a historic defense who is very difficult to score on. They got them. They got him one game. But it's just, it's hard to be very consistent against a team like the Thunder's defense.
Now, on to the Eastern Conference Finals. This series, man, it's so good. It is grade A television. Some of the best entertainment you will see in the NBA ever. I mean, it's so fun to watch. Obviously, game one, we had the Halliburton shot to tie it. The Pacers go on to win in MSG 138-135. Before we left for the weekend, I said, okay, Knicks, you have to win tonight. You don't want to go to Indiana down 2-0 because teams that go down 2-0 in the conference finals, you know how many teams have come back? 2-0 in the conference finals having lost both games at home. You know how many teams have come back in that situation? Zero. None. So it was a must-win game. They end up losing that one late, 114-109. Then we get to Sunday, and the Pacers were controlling everything again, up by 20. But Karl-Anthony Towns comes along, makes some things happen. In that fourth quarter, 20 points, 8 rebounds, 3 for 4 from 3. They needed it because Jalen Brunson was a no-show and had foul trouble. But the Knicks came back from 20 down. They're now the first team in the play-by-play era since the 1997-98 season to achieve 3 20-point comeback victories in a single playoff run. And here's the more insane stat, or the insane part of that. All three of those comeback wins for the New York Knicks were on the road in NBA playoff basketball. So you have two teams, as resilient as they come, battling it out and finding ways to win in bad situations. So this series is just way out up in the air. Game four is coming up tonight. It'll be on 92.9 ESPN. But this has been a fun one since it started. And every game's close. Every game goes down to the final minutes. And there's just these little tiny details that separate winners from losers.
Karl-Anthony Towns, without a doubt, played the best basketball quarter.
Best stretch of his career.
Of his entire career. He saved the Knicks season in that game, at least for another couple of games. And I'm really happy the Knicks won that game because I want to see more basketball between these two teams because it's exciting every time. And it's been funny, this year in the playoffs, a 20-point lead is the least safe thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yep.
If you go up by 20, oh my God, you're probably going to lose the game.
Yes.
It's been insane to see the comebacks that we have, and the Pacers and the Knicks have just been involved, and it feels like all of them. So I hope that we continue to get a long series. The Pacers just could not score anymore. And, you know, then they were dealing with a couple of injuries, but it does sound like their entire team is going to be healthy for the next game, which is going to be exciting to see. Jalen Brunson just didn't really have it until he needed to, though.
Yes.
And that's the important thing. Jalen Brunson, clutch player in the NBA. When you needed him, he showed up. And my favorite thing is watching Josh Hart rebound.
Oh, my God.
That man would go into the depths of hell to get a rebound. It's as if he doesn't get a rebound, his family will die.
The one at the end of the game where he's skying over Miles Turner
crazy.
And Pascal and all these guys, he is ridiculous. He started at the free throw line, gets about 2 or 3 feet away from where a wing three would be taken from, and skies like 40 inches in the air over guys that are about a foot taller than him and grabs a rebound. He is great in those late game situations. But here's what I thought about that. He didn't start in game three. I think he's trying to get back in the starting lineup. I think he's trying to get back in the good graces of Tom Thibodeau so he can play extended minutes. He did end up playing extended minutes because he was good, didn't take a lot of shots, did all the dirty work. But I think he was trying to prove, hey, instead of Mitch, maybe I need to be in the starting lineup going into game four.
Maybe so. I also think that Josh Hart's just a pro's pro.
Yep.
He's the perfect type of player you want on your team. All he cares about is winning, and if he has to come off the bench.
He took three shots. He had 8 points and 10 rebounds and 4 assists. He took three
six
shots.
Of six from the line. Yeah. That's important. Like, he is the perfect version of a six man. When he comes off of your bench, when he starts for you, he impacts the basketball game. When he comes off the bench, he impacts the basketball game, and he doesn't complain. He's exactly the type of player you want on your team. That's why, for years, everybody in Grizzlies fandom have wanted Josh Hart. The reason why was game three. Go watch game three. That's why you want Josh Hart on your team.
Two very interesting things that happened, though, in that game down the stretch that I thought. When Jalen Brunson was out for most of the fourth quarter, he didn't come back till 1:37, which that's one of the interesting things. I thought it was insane that Tom Thibodeau went with Miles McBride that long. You brought Jalen Brunson with one foul left back with 1:37. Get him in with three. He's still your closer. I know he hasn't played well tonight. But he's still the best closer in these playoffs outside of Tyrese Haliburton.
And then he immediately showed it.
And then, of course, in the paint with a guy towering over him, knocks in a beautiful floater that you just thought he had no chance of making. But it is Jalen Brunson, so there's always a chance. But the other part of it, you brought up the Pacers and their lack of scoring in the fourth quarter and their struggles. I thought part of that, obviously Karl Anthony Towns had to have the best stretch of basketball in his career to do the scoring. Don't get it twisted. So that's part of this. But I thought part of the reason that the Knicks were better defensively against this Pacers team is because Jalen Brunson was off the floor in that fourth quarter.
I think that's why Miles McBride got more of a run. He was more active.
He was more active, but there did come a point where it's like, Tibbs,
right.
Stop outsmarting yourself.
Right.
You're going to need the scoring down the stretch in the last 3 minutes.
Right. And that's why a lot of people were questioning Tibbs the last few games.
But
and deservedly so.
The Pacers have picked on Kat and picked on Jalen Brunson this entire series. When you take one of those two off the floor, there's less things and pieces and players to expose for the Indiana Pacers. That's why they struggled offensively
right.
in that fourth quarter. So it was a strange sort of game of chess, a back and forth, and obviously the Knicks took advantage late.
Speaking of chess, have you seen the quotes that Rick Carlisle keeps giving about like campaign and Precious Achiuwa?
Yeah, what's he doing?
He's trying to bait him into playing him. It's nasty
Smith,
work.
Kenny Smith with the best one-liner of the century. He said he wouldn't play nine. Tibbs wouldn't play nine guys if he was coaching baseball.
Right. Oh, yeah. That was very good. That is very true.
One of the best one-liners ever.
Do we want to talk about the foul?
Go ahead.
The foul up three.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That was obviously last night.
Yeah.
Thunder, Timberwolves game. I think the reason you're bringing this up. And it's not anything that, anyone has to say about the actual, strategy of it. Like, people enjoy the strategy of it. I do think I saw a fair amount of people after last night's Thunder win and they fouled up three twice. I saw a lot of people saying, we need to get this out of the game. So, people brought up, like, the take foul and getting that out of the game. They think this is similar. I don't like that thought process. And this is not something you're making up or I'm making up. This is something that is very much out there.
It exploded last night.
We have a guy on the show, Keith Smith. from SpotTrack, who friend of the show, joins all the time. He is a big proponent of getting rid of the foul up three late in games. He says he hates it. He says he doesn't feel like it's you know, helping the product. But at the same time, I think it happens so rarely that it's just a strategy point. It's like in football, for example, you know, kneeing on the ball. That's not fun. No one enjoys kneeing the clock out.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I see the other team have a chance to go win the game, but it's strategy. And if I have the opportunity to do so, I'm going to do it. So I don't agree with people that say they need to take it out of the game. I think it's part of strategy that we need to keep.
I understand that entertainment-wise, it's bad.
Sure.
It sucks. When it happened, like, you're like, oh, man, because it was an awesome game. You felt like it was going to be an amazing finish. And then you kind of forget that there's this possibility of fouling up three. And then when it happened twice, you were just like, oh, this is a huge bummer. If there's a tweak to it, maybe so. Like, I saw some people suggest that the teams get to decide if they want the ball out. And there are some tweaks to it that maybe you can make. But completely removing it from the game, I don't agree with, because it doesn't happen often enough to where it's a huge issue. It is strategy, and I also think that there's a balancing act between you can't give the team that's down an advantage, and if you take that away from the game, it gives them an advantage.
And let's be honest, to a certain extent, I kind of enjoyed it because I thought it was wonderfully played.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.